UK Wine Show, show number 110. Xavier Rousset on getting the most from your sommelier. On this week's show, we cast a spotlight into wine and health. Xavier Rousset, sommelier at Texture Restaurant, gives us the do's and don'ts and what you get for paying a bit more for your wine.
And in the news, the IWC announces trophy winners, Oz Harvest exceeds expectations, and UK wine drinkers set to overtake continental cousins.
G'day, welcome to the UK Wine Show, show number 110 for the 20th of June. My name's Chris Scott, and this week we talk with Xavier Rousset. Xavier is a sommelier trained in the Loire Valley and brought up in the Rhone Valley. We ask him about what he can learn from a wine list, about the menu and the restaurant, and what you should expect for the money we pay. And in the spotlight, we look at wine and health. But before we get into that, let's have the news with Jane Scott.
Thanks, Chris. 90 of the 267 wines that were awarded gold medals last month in the International Wine Challenge were given trophy status after a further blind tasting. France took most of the trophies, with 19 in all, to regain its crown from Australia, and Australia came second with 18, while Portugal was third for the third year running with 12 trophies. But three wines from Burgundy, Coonawarra and Central Otago really stood out, each scooping four trophies. Maison Auvergne's Puy-Fuze, Vieille Vigne 2006, claimed the International Chardonnay, French White, White Burgundy and Puy-Fuze trophies. Meanwhile, across the globe, Magella Cabernet Sauvignon 2005 picked up International Cabernet Sauvignon, Australian Red, South Australian Red and Coonawarra trophies. And over in New Zealand, Wild Earth Pinot Noir 2006 won the International Pinot Noir, the New Zealand Red, New Zealand Pinot Noir and Central Otago Pinot Noir trophies. Closer to home, Husheath Estate took the English trophy for its Balfour Brew Rosé, a fantastic achievement for Richard Balfour, owner of the Hotel Duvan chain, given it's his first vintage from his vineyard in Kent. Any comments, Chris?
Well, I'm really excited to see another Otago Pinot gets the International Pinot Noir trophy. Last year, another Otago Pinot from Bald Hills won, just around the same area of Bannockburn. Puy-Fuze, as a region, is one of my favourite white Burgundy regions, actually. Not as heavy as some of the styles, but a personal favourite of mine, and I'm really pleased it's getting some good ratings. Well, obviously, back in the UK, Husheath, their rosé is doing pretty good things, so congratulations to them all. What's next, Jane?
Well, Australia's 2008 grape harvest has come in above expectations in both size and quality. That's according to the Winemakers Federation of Australia, or the WFA. Hitting 1.83 million tonnes, the vintage is up more than 30% on last year, which is significantly larger than estimations made at the start of the growing season, and almost double some early forecasts. Red grapes accounted for 53% of the harvest, with Shiraz at just under 24% of the total, while Chardonnay remains the country's most popular grape at over 24% of the total vintage. The harvest should dispel any fears about Australia's ability to supply international and domestic markets. But with pressure around water shortages and a strong Australian dollar, the WFA say the focus must be on producing high-quality wines rather than competing on price alone.
The stories of the demise of the Australian viticulture may seem a bit premature, but with global warming, they are on a hiding to nothing. But a big Aussie crush is good news for UK wine drinkers. The last year or so, the supply of wine has been fairly tight, and it's meant with a weakening pound that prices of good quality wine at a reasonable price are getting pretty thin on the ground. So, a decent crush from Australia helps keep the pressure on suppliers and keeps the wines in check. What's the last story, Jane?
Well, finally this week, according to research commissioned by Vinexpo, the Bordeaux-based wine and spirits fair, UK drinkers are predicted to become the biggest European spenders on wine within the next 3 years. By 2010, retail sales are forecast to hit nearly £5.5 billion in the UK. And if predictions are correct, it means we British will be spending more on wine than even the French, who along with the Italians and Germans spend the most on wine in Europe. The growth in UK sales is a long-term trend, explained not only by the rises in the amount of wine drunk, but also by the trend to drink better quality wines, and sadly by UK's high tax on alcohol. British drinkers consume nearly 1.7 billion bottles of wine, equivalent to nearly 27 litres per person, or 36 bottles a year. This is roughly the same as Australia at 28 litres, but a long way behind Germany at 36 litres. Red wine accounts for just over half of all the wine drunk and has been increasing, while consumption of rosé is forecast to rise by 25% by 2010. That's all from me this week, but don't forget to check out our website 3050.co.uk for these stories in full.
Cheers, Jane. Thanks for the news. The other bit of news I noticed is that Kevin Rudd, the Australian Prime Minister, has been caught in the middle of a slinging match between the National Health and Medical Research Council, which claimed that four pots, or roughly 1.1 litres of beer, or 2 pints in the UK, around 5 units, you know, is the absolute threshold and should be used to define what binge drinking is. In the UK, the upper limit is 21 units a week. Hazardous drinking is considered 50 units, and harmful drinking is over 50 units a week. The problem is that the word binge drinking is not really defined anywhere, but bounded about, and like it has some sort of meaning. And what do these measures mean? Well, in the spotlight this week, we'd look at wine and health, and with wine being a social lubricant, medicine and poison, we ask, what is the correct dosage? Wine itself is generally considered a healthy drink, but too much can be harmful. While much in the press in recent years has been focused on the negative effects of alcohol, alcohol and wine have in moderate dosages been linked to a number of health benefits. We attempt to put the argument for wine and against alcohol solely from a physical and mental health perspective. And let's start with the benefits of wine and health. The health benefits of wine. Wine is made up from a huge array of chemicals. Some give the wine its colour, some flavour, and others feel or texture. While the grapevine may not have intended it, some of those chemicals can be medicinal. The groupings of all these chemicals are known as polyphenols. In most research into the health benefits of wine, two key chemicals come up, prosiodines and resveratrol. In experimentations on mice on high-calorie diets, those given large doses of resveratrol do outlive other mice on a similar diet. And the resveratrol almost completely mitigates the effects of diet that is high in fat. Wine typically has about 0.3% of a dosage that were given to the mice. So if you really rely on wine as your source of resveratrol, you'll almost certainly be suffering from liver disease before you get anywhere near the target dosages of mice, let alone the higher dosages required by humans to benefit. The second possible polyphenol is a chemical known as prosiodines. This is often associated with wines with high tannins and colour. The main benefits include improved vascular function, and this reduces the risk of heart attacks and strokes, thus improving the chance of overall well-being and length of life. Risk factors from heart disease are also risk factors for a number of illnesses, including dementia, age-related molecular degeneration, that's old age blindness, and obesity. In wine, polyphenols, and in particular, short, small prosiodines are often associated with young, tannic red wines. In older wines, these chemicals are less plentiful. As a wine matures, those short tannins clump together to form larger chains. Eventually, they precipitate out of the wine, forming the sediment. So the type of wine to drink is young red wines that are rich in tannins. That's sorry to say that those easy drinking reds probably aren't the best wines to drink for improving your health. But let's face it, tannic wines don't need to be hard work to drink. Tannic red wines go great with meats and cheeses, so consider drinking those with a meal. Not only will they taste better, but they'll also slow down the time it takes the alcohol to hit your bloodstream, reducing the stress on your liver. The grape varieties to look out for in importance are Tannat, Cabernet Sauvignon, Nebbiolo, and Malbec. Try wines from the southeast of France, such as Cahors, or possibly Italy, or in Argentina, Mendoza. That ends this week's Look on Spotlight. Next week, we continue our look at wine and health by looking at what are the limits and what do they mean. Don't forget this week's poll, which is related to this week's spotlight. How many units in a 250ml glass of wine? Is it 1, 2, 3, or 4? Go to our website, www.3050.co.uk. Click on the podcast button. You can enter what you think on the right-hand side. So, next up, we talk to Xavier Rousset, sommelier, about how to get the most out of a sommelier. Let's have a listen to see what Xavier has to say. Hi, I'm here with Xavier Rousset. You're a sommelier at Texture Restaurant. You're a fairly top-end sommelier, won quite a few awards and all that sort of stuff. Do you want to tell me a wee bit about yourself?
Well, how I came about, you mean as a sommelier?
Yeah, your history.
It's a very funny story because I'm from France, from Saint-Étienne originally, and I read in the local newspaper an article about a top sommelier, French sommelier in the UK, which is called Gérard Basset, which is very, very famous in the industry. He's from the same city. So I read about him and his CV, and I wrote him a letter saying that I'd like to become a sommelier and work in England to, you know, improve my English and so on. So he phoned me back, and I went to Winchester for a month. Then I really enjoyed the whole thing, so I stayed for a few more months. Then he sent me to a sommelier school in the Loire Valley in Saumur, and then I still kept in touch with him. So once I've passed the exam of a sommelier, then he took me back to his hotel. He's just newly opened in Bristol, which I was there for 5 years, then moved on to Le Manoir Quatre Saisons in Oxford, and then opened Texture in September 07.
Tell me a bit about sommelier school in the Loire. What's going on there?
Well, I mean, there's a few sommelier schools throughout France. Loire, Rhône, usually some wine-making region. But it's only a year, so it gives you the base. And actually, a year is only even 9 months, which only give you the base. So how to taste wine, a bit of viticulture, oenology. So I did there a harvest for 2 weeks, worked in a wine shop, and worked in a restaurant. So you cover the whole spectrum, not the whole in 9 months, but that gives you a good good impression of the job. Fantastic, and tasting some wines, going to the wine, the wineries, and fantastic. I was about 18 years old. So it is less and less, unfortunately, less and less sommelier school. I think mine closed because there's less and less people want to do it.
Oh, really?
Which is surprisingly, because, I mean, the whole catering industry is pretty tough. So less and less people want to do it because of the hours and, as you well know.
Yeah, they're not the most sociable hours.
They are not the most sociable hours, no.
So your current responsibilities at Texture Restaurant?
Well, I'm in charge of the... I co-own it with the chef. So I'm in charge of the front of house. He's in charge of the kitchen. I do the wine list, bar list, and the service as well. So I help, obviously, and I've got a commis sommelier with me as well.
Okay, so you're an assistant sommelier.
Yeah, exactly.
Has he been to sommelier school?
Yeah, he went, he's from, I think, Paris. Yeah, he's from Paris, and then he worked at 2 top places in Paris before coming to join us in London.
Excellent. In your sommelier school, did you learn all about all the wines of the world, or was it mainly French?
Yeah, mainly French, and also even further, mainly from the region.
Mainly Loire.
Yeah. So if you're in the Rhône Valley, you learn mainly from the Rhône Valley. I was in the Loire, I learned mainly from the Loire. Which is, is good, but then that gives you just a little knowledge as such. Then you really need to work hard at it.
Okay, brilliant. Okay, so you know lots about the Loire.
Well, I haven't been there for 10 years, so I caught up on the Champagne, the Rhône. I love the Rhône Valley. I'm originally not far from there, so I know probably more the Rhône Valley now than I do the Loire.
Okay, so if I'm a customer coming to your restaurant, what should I do with... You give me the wine list, I go... Where do I start? What do you think is the ideal process of someone sitting down at a restaurant and ordering their meal and wine?
Well, the best is, I think, to communicate with the people in charge of the wine service. It could be sommelier, it could be the restaurant manager. It's not always sommelier. There's not many sommeliers, as a matter of fact, in restaurants. Sometimes it's the restaurant manager who covers it. But I think by having a talk and a conversation, telling what you want, what you like, then the style of wine you like, and probably give a hint on the budget. Not always the case. Sometimes we, as a sommelier, need to assess that. But and then you have a conversation and you get some recommendation. I do the same when I go to a restaurant. I don't know the wines necessarily. I get a recommendation.
When I go to most restaurants, the first thing they do is give you a wine list to choose your bottle of wine.
Yeah.
And then you choose your meal afterwards. And it's almost, I always think it's around the wrong way. You need to maybe choose what you're going to eat first.
And usually it's what you eat first. But I do like the idea of you choose your wine first and then the food. Yeah. Actually, that sounds like a good idea to me.
Really?
No, I usually do that anyway. As soon as I go to a restaurant, I scrutinize the wine list, spend 10, 15 minutes on it, and then have a quick glance at the menu and order my food quick.
You're like me. Yeah. So you can learn a lot about a restaurant. Well, I can learn a lot about a restaurant from their wine list. What sort of things do you keep an eye out for? What sort of markers on that wine list are helpful to people in a restaurant?
What makes a good wine list, you mean, or what do I look into a wine list?
Yeah, when you're looking at a wine list,
what processes, what are you thinking about on that list in terms to understand what the wines?
Diversity, different varieties, looking at all sorts of spectrum of flavors. The balance on the wine is from price brackets, from regions. And something I usually myself look at something a bit quirky, a bit interesting that I don't come across every day. Yeah. As we taste quite a bit of wine every day or every week. So when I go to a restaurant or something else, something new.
What can you learn from a wine list about the restaurant?
Well, a friend of mine usually says he looks at the glassware to know how good the restaurant, the quality of the restaurant is.
Yep.
Now, if you look at the wine list, it gives you a tip also how much they care. If they care about wine, they usually care about food. You know, one doesn't go without the other, usually, 99%. So if they take great care of putting a good wine list together, you're hoping that there's someone behind it that is passionate about it and will do you a good service, and the quality in the kitchen, the food will follow as well. Mm-hmm. Like I say, it's not always the case, but mainly.
And you talked about diversity. Obviously, you're from Rhone Valley with a bit of experience in the Loire. What would you consider, 5,000 bottles of Bordeaux is a good diversity of range, or do you think it's more about having Chile as well as Argentina?
Oh, everything. Yeah. Everything, especially when you're in this country. Unless you're in a wine region, then yes, you may want to, target more the wine region. But if you're like in London, diversity means every country.
Yeah.
Every grape possible, from the Portuguese unknown to the, Sicilian grapes, whatever, Viognier and so on, and different price bracket. But it has to be as diverse as possible, and I think if you cover that, you got everybody happy as a consumer, because it's everybody's palate is different. And if that's what I said, by them linking with you and asking you a question, you understand the palate a bit more.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not about what you want them to have, it's what they want to have, and done to you to put the right bottle on the table.
You talked about price, indicating to the sommelier price. Mm-hmm. I always think you need to tell exactly the sommelier what you want to spend.
It makes our life easier as well.
Yeah,
somehow. But there's tricks or tips whereby you can point out of at a vintage and say, oh, I like that sort of wine. And very well the price is next to the vintage. So you look at the price when someone says, oh, I like that wine, looking at the £40 or £20.
That's where you can indicate it without saying.
Without saying, because if you're entertaining some guest, you don't want to say necessarily how much you're spending on a bottle of wine. So you can be quite discreet and whisper to the sommelier, or putting your finger on the wine list. On the vintage on the wine list, if you see what I mean. I say, oh, I love those sort of wine. Then putting next to the vintage is the price. So that gives us an indication of the price bracket the gentleman is looking at or the lady.
Sure.
And also there's whereby someone says, oh, I love Sancerre or I love Mouton Rothschild. You got two different spectrum there. You got Sancerre, say, £30 to £40, or you got Mouton Rothschild, which is £100, £200, £300. So that could give you also an indication of what sort of budget they like by telling someone, I love that wine, can I try something similar to that?
Yeah.
Okay, so if someone walks in tomorrow or today and say, oh, I love Latour 1945, what do you recommend today? That gives you a pretty clear indication of what... or I love the little white from the southwest.
Yeah.
Very well, it's not going to reach £100, so you know exactly where you are.
Okay. One of the things I tell people when they're trying to work out the pricing on a restaurant wine list is... to have a look at, say, Sancerre or Chablis, just bulk standard AC Sancerre or AC Chablis, because in the high street you pay about £10, maybe a wee bit more, and a restaurant in London, £30 to £35 is about right. And if they're charging a lot more than that, maybe their pricing is quite enthusiastic. If they're charging a wee bit less, maybe the wines are they're maybe a bit cheaper in terms of their markup on the wines. Do you think that's a fair comment, or...?
Do you mean that... They are gentle if they care about wine, or...?
Well, just if you're trying to work out what the markup on a restaurant's wine list is, because markups on restaurant wine lists
can be tremendously high.
Huge range.
That's true, from 2 to 5.
Yeah.
Multiplied by 2 or multiplied by 5, depending where you are. And, that could somehow give you the level of service you might get as well, whereby if you've got more staff doing the service of the wine, you may have to put your markup slightly higher to cover the cost of the staff.
Yep.
Some brasserie just does multiply by 2, but then it means that you almost open a bottle yourself. You know what I mean? They open it, they put it on the table, you do the service yourself. What I hate the most is when the markups are extremely high and there's nothing behind it, and there's no service, there's no care.
Yep.
I don't mind paying a bit more if everything else is perfect.
Yeah.
Service-wise and the temperature and so on. The glassware is very important as well. But, yeah, what I don't like is being ripped off. I don't think anybody likes that.
No, for sure.
So, yeah, but you're right. The variety, the range of markups could be, you know. And people don't always understand why, actually. Why a restaurant does multiply by two, one, another one around the corner does multiply by five.
Yeah.
I think one is staff cost, level of staffing and service provided and the glassware. Like I say, everything from a glass can cost you £1 up to some glasses, £10 a glass. So,
sure. What sort of thing should you be looking for in your glassware then at the restaurant?
The glassware, something, I mean, obviously aesthetic and nice to handle, quite light. And also different glass maker produces where it goes different part of your tongue, depending on the grape variety.
Yeah,
so from the
sure.
Riesling to Chardonnay to Pinot. But a good glassware is something you're really happy to drink with.
Well, one thing I always look out for is the rim of the glass.
Yeah.
It's a rolled rim versus a cut
rim. Yeah.
Is that a good indicator of quality?
Yeah, I mean, true. And also how light it is, usually.
See, so the lighter the glass, the better.
Usually.
Yeah, I like big, heavy glass.
Yeah, but they are usually, you know, they are very strong, don't get me wrong. They are good, you know, because you're pretty safe there. But if they are, you know, I'm not an expert on glass.
Yeah.
But it's something very thin rim as well for you to drink out of.
So some rims have
pleasurable.
Got a big, fat,
yeah,
rolled
exactly.
lip to
don't.
It. And that's quite cheap glassware usually. Okay. And what about a lot of restaurants, you know, if you're at home and you've got a big red, you know, one of these big Bordeaux that cost hundreds of pounds at a restaurant. At home, you might open it a couple of hours beforehand.
Uh-huh.
But at restaurants,
you
can't. And no one ever seems to decant the wine to let it breathe or anything like that. Do you guys
Oh,
do that
sure. I mean, decanting is something we do on a regular basis. And I think you can always ask. That's a good indication of the level of restaurant as well. If they don't know what decanting is or they don't have decanter, so and they charge you five times the price of what it should, that's why I get annoyed.
Yep.
You know, if they charge you £50 for a bottle, it will cost 10, and they don't provide you any service to go with it, then, yeah, of course, that's frustrating. But no, we decant a lot of white and red, but, you know, white as well. People don't consider white wine to be put in a decanter. It's not so much for the sediment, obviously, but it's more to let it breathe.
Yeah. Letting a red wine.
And the glassware plays a big part. The big burgundies as well open up the wines a bit quicker. So, no, it does. I think any good restaurant will do it. I've got no worry on that. No, that if you ask someone as well, they can always do it. Because decanting, specific point, is not everybody will agree on that. Some people hardly decant anything. Some people decant everything. So it's two schools almost.
But if you've got something like a Barolo or some quite big wine, you know, you'd want to get it decanted almost,
yeah.
unless it's really
yeah.
old.
Yeah.
You know, if it was maybe really, really old, perhaps not. But is that a service you automatically do for your at your
yeah,
restaurant?
Yeah, well, I always ask because, it's like I said, it's not everybody wants it decanted, but I always ask, do you mind if I decant it? And by doing that at the beginning of the meal, you give it a good 45 minutes to an hour breathe, and decanting accelerates the whole process. So comes the main course, usually where the red is consumed, then you're fine.
Okay, so perhaps when people are ordering wines, if they've got a reasonable size group, they should perhaps order their whites and their reds at the same time and
mm-hmm.
then get their reds decanted
yeah.
so they've got a chance to breathe.
Exactly, that's a tip I could give, order your red as soon as.
Oh, okay, I'd never really thought about doing
yeah,
that
because
way.
Then we open it as the earlier you order it, almost the earlier we open it or decant it.
Yep. Do you use aerators or anything like that, or do you just pour it straight into it's, the...
Yeah, decanter, no, straight.
Yeah, you don't aerate it or anything like that. Okay, all right. Any other tips, Xavier?
Tips on how to order your wine in a restaurant. Like I said, I mean, I only rely to the people in charge there for the wine. If I see the glassware is right, if I see the scan into the wine, if you go to your local restaurant and you see there's hardly, you know, it's all student part-time doing service in the dinner, I'm not going to ask for a tip on the wine. But the environment where you're in can give you a influence on your judgment or that you make on your own, obviously, to ask someone for guidance. I'll do that. I always do that. And like I said, be fairly honest, fairly open. Maybe you want to give them straight a budget or give them a hint on the budget. Then you won't have a bad surprise when the bill comes.
Well, one last thing I forgot to ask. The process, the sommelier, when he presents the bottle, he or she presents the bottle, can you just go through what you think is an appropriate process? I've been to restaurants where they've opened the wine out the back. And I'm never happy about that because
yeah.
I always feel, well, you've got no confidence in
yeah,
actually getting
exactly
the right
no.
product.
I think it has to be at the view of the table to order the wine, for sure. You know, the bottle, I always say the bottle should not leave the room unless it's empty. Because exactly for that reason, to give confidence to the people that what they paid is what they ordered and that's what they're drinking as well. So, that's for sure. Now, what was the question about how to taste and...
Well, no, so someone orders a bottle of wine, you turn up at their table. What's your sort of process of getting the bottle poured into the glasses? Do you just go and open it and pour it for everybody?
Or? No. You make someone taste because, again, cork taint. But we do taste every single bottle that goes on the table. So hopefully cork taint is lower level.
Oh, you taste the wines first?
Yeah. A little bit. We don't abuse, but...
I can see a bottle of Pinterest and by the time it gets to the table, it's only half a bottle.
Everything, but hardly like a sip. Just to check first the evolution of the wine. It's interesting to get to know our list.
Yeah, yeah.
If the temperature is right, if it's important also, and if it's corked or not.
Mm-hmm.
Then you make the judgment yourself, but then you go and see the customer that ordered it. Yeah, taste it and make the guest taste, see if he's happy with the flavors, the condition of the wine, and then pour away the table. Make sure you don't, unless there are six or seven people, but don't never finish a bottle in four glasses. There's nothing worse than, I've seen that, where people have four big glasses.
Yeah.
Just to cut on service, and it's not right.
I always normally about half full.
Yeah, exactly. A third full the glass even.
Yeah.
For the white as well, because then you can keep it cold and top up.
Okay. What about if the wine's faulty and you don't think it is, but the client thinks it is?
Change it.
You just change it automatically? Yeah, even if it's a £2,000 bottle of wine?
All right, I've never touched wood. Never happened to me. So I said change it, I'll maybe think twice then. But no, because you don't. In the long run, you're not winning anything.
Yeah.
You're losing a customer who's not happy drinking what he thinks is corked. So what's the point for him to have a bad meal? Because it's going to get from bad to worse. Because he's not going to be happy. All the table around will feel it. He's not going to have a good time. The food, therefore, will taste bitter to him. And, you know.
What happens if he doesn't like the wine or she doesn't like the wine?
Change it again, yeah.
You're quite happy to change wines even if they
don't
like it?
I'm sure I'm happy, yeah. But there's more and more people who do that now.
Yeah.
Again, same reason. You make someone unhappy to be in your restaurant.
Yep.
And also, if you think the wine is technically right, you don't need to worry. You'll sell it again. Or a regular that comes, make him try for free a glass and say, oh, look, where's my compliment? It might cost you £10, which is in the big picture is not much.
Okay, so if you think the wine's sound, you could just offer it to good customers. So it's not that bad, and you get quite good kudos for that.
For sure. For sure. If it's technically right, then, of course, you're not going to bin it. You need to make him taste your stuff to some regulars that comes that day or, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
So, no, I wouldn't...
The chef can always use it.
Yeah, the chef can always... But I never pour it into the sink because the customer says it's not good if I think it's good. So.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, then. I think we'll wrap it up there. Thanks very much, Xavier.
Thank you.
Cheers. I hope you enjoyed that interview with Xavier. There were lots of great tips in there. Sadly, I think I gave away the type of restaurants I go to and possibly not the ones that Xavier works at. While I applaud Xavier's ethics, I think I would get a bit upset if I owned a restaurant and someone picked a wine, and it was okay, but they didn't like it. My advice to people is, if a wine's faulty, get it changed. No mucking around. But if it's okay, but you just don't like it, well, to be honest, I think that's a bit tough. I suppose if you're charging big margins, then fair enough. And it's all about a level of service, which I suppose how much you're willing to pay for. Well, to finish up this week, it's our joke. Back to some old stereotypes. This is an old wine joke. I'm sure some of you may have heard it. Women are like apples on tree. The best ones are at the top of the tree. Most men don't want to reach for the good ones because they're afraid of falling and getting hurt. Instead, sometimes they pick up apples from the ground that aren't that good, but are easy. The apples at the top think, what is wrong with them? When in reality, they're amazing. They just have to wait for the right person to come along, the one who is brave enough to climb all the way to the top of the tree. Now men are like fine wine. They begin as grapes, and it's up to women to stomp the crap out of them until they turn into something that's more acceptable to have with dinner. Until next week, cheers and good drinking.
The UK Wine Show is a weekly podcast brought to you by 3050, the wine tasting company. The show is produced by Jane Scott, recorded and edited by Chris Scott, and the news is researched by Sandra Clement. To listen to other shows, visit www.ukwineshow.co.uk. Thank you for listening.